Hi, this is Greg Kellstrom. Welcome to the Agile World Podcast, where we discuss customer experience, employee experience, and transformation in an agile age. The Agile World Podcast is brought to you by Tech Systems, an industry leader in full-stack technology services, talent services, and real-world application. For more information, go to techsystems.com. To read more about the topics discussed on this show, you can go to my website at theagile.world and read my latest articles or get a copy of my latest book, The Center of Experience, a blueprint for creating an experience-led organization, now available on Amazon and other retailers.
My name is Greg Kellstrom, and I'm the host of the Agile World Podcast. Today, we're going to talk about technology and its role in enhancing the customer experience. Technologies like artificial intelligence, virtual and augmented reality, automation, and many others promise better data, better access, and better ways of reaching customers. But what about the customer's perspective? How will these technologies help customers solve their challenges more easily and offer a better customer experience with products and services they regularly interact with? To help me discuss this topic, I'd like to welcome Charlie Oliver. First, why don't you tell me a little bit about what you do at Tech 2025?
Hi, thank you, Greg. Thanks for having me on the show. Really excited to be here. And I am the founder and CEO of Tech 2025, which is a subsidiary of Surfresh Media, my digital marketing agency that's been around for about 10 years now. Boy, time flies. So I launched Tech 2025 3 years ago as a platform and community for discussing the impact of emerging technologies on society, but even more so than that, to educate us on what these technologies are, where the opportunities are, where the problems are, that type of thing, bringing together different stakeholders, and definitely doing it from the perspective of considering ordinary people, right? And so to that end, this is our events, our experiences are very much open to the public, the general public. You know, we have a very professional, you know, network in terms of everyone's doing something, either they have a startup or they are in corporate America. But we want to have diverse conversations about these things, because oftentimes the consumer's point of view, or, you know, our way of thinking when we're using these technologies is not really considered when they're being developed. So.
That's great. Yeah. And yeah, I see your notices for your events, and I always at least want to try to attend if I can make it. So definitely you're doing some really interesting stuff. So that's
thank
great.
You. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah. Well, let's start about talking about what makes good customer experience. So, you know, how would you define that? You know, what is great customer experience?
Okay. Well, I would say, I mean, simply put, you know, a great customer experience is one that gives me what I want, offers what I need as well. So I want what I want and I want what I need. And those are two very different things, because I may not know that I need something. I need the business to be sort of anticipate, right, what it is that I want, what it is that I need, I should say. And then I want to be delighted. You know, I want to experience something that gets me to try something new or see something different about myself or the world or, you know, anything, you know. So I want what I need, and I want to be delighted with an experience that gives me a new perspective on something. Now, that might be a lot to ask, right? You may only get two of those things. I can't remember the last time I was delighted walking into a Starbucks. although a lot happens, but that translates into a lot of different things, right? That translates into product, the speed at which something is given to you, but also the design of the store a lot of times facilitates like the delight of the experience. You know, is it helping people to sort of interact more in a positive way, or is it really such a horribly designed experience in store that you just want to get in and get out and that's it? So there's a lot that goes into that. But yeah, I would say that. I would say, give me what I want, give me what I need, and delight me with something that surprises me and takes me further than I thought I would go in the experience.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, on one hand, that seems actually pretty straightforward, but why do you think companies are struggling to do this? Because, I mean, to your point, maybe you can get one. Ideally, you could get two. You know, if you get all three, it's, you know, you're telling other people about it, right? But, you know, right. What do you think the barriers are to, you know, companies really providing that great customer experience are, and, you know, what can they do about it?
That's a great question. That's kind of like the multi-billion dollar, trillion dollar question, right? I mean, so let's start with the facts that everything is far more complicated than it was just a few years ago, right? I mean, there's a million platforms that ultimately a customer experience boils down to communication. Ultimately, it's you telling me what you want, me understanding that and giving it to you the way I know that you want it. And it's a, this constant communication between the customer and the store owner or the, you know, brand. And communication has never been more complicated. You know, it's just, you know, if you converse with me, if you communicate with me on one platform, I might love you. You do say the same thing on another platform and I might hashtag and protest you right out of business, right? So it's complicated. So to that end, you do have to sort of feel for brands and for the people who are having to figure out this communication across multi-channels that are always changing. The rules are changing. You know, what Twitter allows today, they may not allow tomorrow. You know, the way people feel today, they may absolutely protest tomorrow. It's really incredible. So that's one thing. The communication is really difficult to grasp. And if you are able to do that, it's very, you know, staying on top of that is difficult. And companies and agencies and everything have to do that while their own internal processes are constantly changing over and over and over again. So that's one thing. That is the major thing, right? The other thing is that I think because, you know, everything's changing so quickly, which I think we're all on the same page about that now at this point, right? That the world is changing so quickly, like, God help us. You know, I don't know anyone who can really fit, right? It's like, right, wow. Right. The other thing about that is that we don't know what we necessarily want. You know, there was a time when it was easy to define that for the consumer, right? There was a time when brands, companies were able to say, this is aspirationally speaking, this is what you should want, and we can give it to you. You want a house, a car, two children, da-da-da, and that's it, right? And it was very simple. Now, you know, especially in this era of, as I call it, I won't even say pushback. It's just an awakening of sorts that those things don't exist. Aspirationally, we don't know what we want. What do most people aspire to right now? Well, damn, I just want to make it home and not have to see a tweet where the president is blowing up the planet. Can I, you know what I mean? I'm like, that's what I aspire to. I want to get home and watch Netflix, right? I mean, but it's, so aspirationally speaking, it's very hard to know what to tell or what to understand the consumer wants aspirationally or needs.
Yeah.
So that's another thing, right? So I there's a lot in that. There are a lot of little sub stories in that. But if you want to talk about understanding what people, who they are and how brands can meet those needs, it's not impossible. Of course not. There are some brands that are doing it very well, but it's challenging and it's expensive.
What role does, do you see technology? I mean, you kind of inferred that there's certainly an internal culture and a people component to that. But, you know, what role does technology play in, you know, in providing that or in understanding customers better?
I think it plays a far bigger role than we think it does. But then I also think that we are overemphasizing technology in areas where we shouldn't, where it doesn't play a role, right?
Yeah.
Because we change, the technology changes us and we change the technology. And there are things about human nature for all of the things that are happening around us at breakneck speed, for all of the accelerated innovation that's happening. There are very much still key things about the way that we think and feel and operate as human beings that is not changing that quickly, not yet. And I think that it's easy to minimize or forget that when we emphasize the technology. And I see it at our events because, you know, one of the things that we do is that, you know, as you know, I emphasize, and this is from day one, the reason I launched Tech 2025 is because I said, well, you know, I had clients coming to me in 2016. And again, my clients are primarily enterprise companies and brands. I was having conversations with executives where they would literally like, Charlie, what is going on with AI and machine learning? And 2016 was early,
you know what I mean?
You know, it was out there for sure, but they were looking at, they were seeing the horizon and a cliff, right? And they were like, are we going off the cliff? And I said, well, you know, how is the rest of your organization? Have you begun to have these conversations with your employees about this stuff? It starts with conversations within your own company. And I knew, and we know, and you know, and I know that companies, especially, you know, enterprise companies aren't set up for that, right? It's very much top-down innovation, very much. This is what it is. This is what's going to be trickle down. And I began to see even then in 2016, oh no, if we don't change that and begin to listen to what's happening within our own companies, with listen to the conversations and begin to have those difficult conversations with employees internally, there's not a chance in hell we're going to be able to understand how to implement these technologies wisely, responsibly, you know, externally, right? Yeah. And so I launched Tech 2025 specifically for that. And what I learned immediately, what we began to see was that in our think tanks, where we ask people to figure out problems, very, very grounded real world problems, whether it's on the business side or the consumer facing side, figure out very specific problems that these technologies are inherently creating just by, you know, it amazes us that people, professionals who sit in these think tanks actually express to us things that surprise them.
Yeah.
And they'll say, I get it time and time again. They'll come up to me. I'll have a head of product marketing or head of product development for this company. And I come up to me and say, Charlie, you know, I never thought of this way. I never thought that I felt this way about this particular technology in this particular way, how we're having the conversation here. And the problem with that, or the reason for that, is that we're not asking people, ordinary people in our companies, as well as the consumers, what they think and feel.
Yeah, yeah.
And that has nothing to do with technology. That just has to do with a person, number one, needing to be validated in their thoughts, and number two, us getting to the core of what they think and feel. Not the surfacey, like, oh, this is cool, but like, I feel really vulnerable with this, or I don't know, you know, and getting them to articulate it more. So I guess that's what I mean. I hope I didn't, that was a long way of saying, you know, saying we're screwed.
Okay. Yeah, well, we can get to that. There's two threads I kind of want to follow up on that. I mean, there's definitely an employee experience component that you touched on, and so I want to get back to that in a second. Before I do, you know, from a technology standpoint, I mean, you know, given what you were talking about, you know, obviously there are so many things right now for any, whatever role they play, whether it's CX, marketing, technology, whatever it may be, there's so many things to keep up with. Are there things right now that you feel are overhyped, that, you know, people are, they're putting too much stock into, you know, as kind of a silver bullet to solve problems, that really either the technology isn't mature enough or it's being kind of put up on a pedestal when maybe it needs a little more thought or anything like that?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, there are like 9 emerging technologies all sort of percolating right now, right? And the other reason I launched Tech 2025 was because I kept hearing in 2016 the developers of these technologies saying, you know, in a few years, this all is going to, you know, this is going to be ready for mainstream. And when you read the interviews from back in 2016 and you listen to what the developers of all of these different categories of technologies are saying. They were all saying at around the same time, you know, in about 7 to 8 years, we're going to be ready or whatever. And I'm thinking, wow, that's like 2025.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And it right, it was like I'm eating my oatmeal. And when it occurred to me, I'm like, wait a minute, we've got 9 incredibly
you know, mind-altering, like, you know, game-changing technologies that are really questioning and changing our definition of reality, of how we perceive reality, all developing at the same time. If they all came to fruition, you know, the fullness of the promise of what they can deliver at around the same time, the world would just explode. We can't handle that much change all at once, right? So my thing was, well, if even two of these things came to fruition, we'd still be, it still is game changing. But the question was back then, and when I launched in 2017, we're going on our third year anniversary, was which ones are going to rise to the top and which ones are going to sort of be overhyped to death, right? And so, as you know, the hype cycle is what it is. I would say, honestly, I think, although there's a lot of potential for it, and obviously it's going to be game changing, I think VR. And I know I'm going to get a lot of pushback on that.
I'll send all the emails to you.
Please do. But let me explain. You know, VR, and this is, I'm very careful about the conversations that we have about which technologies with our audience at Tech 2025. I refuse to get on the hype train. Part of what we try to tell people, professionals and consumers or whatever, is don't get dragged by the innovation train. That's going to just like have you going all over the place, right? That's always, there's too much going on. You got to pick and choose the ones that are the things that you want to put your money on, right? There's two things. There's the VR and I'm going to get pushback on this, but you know, the cryptocurrencies. Blockchain, definitely. And again, I want to be clear. I am 100% pro both of these technologies. I know that they are going to eventually, you know, tremendously possibly change the world. The problem is that they were, and again, we live, you and I, we both live in this world of tech. And so I saw the mania around, you know, sort of cryptocurrency, blockchain, you know, the investing and stuff. And it was damaging. It was damaging for people who felt like, I have to invest in this. I have to be a part of this. I have to, you know what I mean? And for the ones who couldn't afford to do it, it was pretty dangerous. There was a lot of things happening in the community that didn't get publicized, that those of us in the community know what's going on, but just sort of like, wow, consumers are going to need to be really smart about this and who's educating them on it, right? And the other thing with VR, for example, is, again, there's a lot of tons of applications for VR that's being used right now that's crucial, like in training, industrial, you know, the Department of Defense. There's a lot of amazing use cases for it. But as for the consumer, aside from gaming, yeah, I don't think it's going to happen for a while. And I think it's so nascent, and there's so much more that needs to be considered when they're developing that particular technology, especially with regards to pushing the idea of creating empathy or facilitating empathy through these technologies. I'm really worried about that.
Yeah.
With VR. I think it's almost irresponsible right now, the way it's being done. So anyway, I would say VR and then cryptocurrency, although,
yeah,
again, both are incredible, right? Like,
yeah, amazing potential. But I agree. And I mean, I think they're being, I would say particularly the blockchain aspect, it's mm-hmm. being applied to a lot of things that it was never even originally intended to be applied to, but sort of as a...
Right.
You know, as a solution, because, hey, it's the latest, you know, it's to your point about the hype cycle and all of that. It's like, well, you know, blockchain could be great in the cases where it's, you know, it really performs well and scales well and everything like that. But don't try to put blockchain on something that blockchain should not be put on just to raise some extra dollars or raise some eyebrows or, whatever the case
would be. Get a promotion or.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and also the question is, when you ask that question, which is why I think that's a question that we should be asking ourselves constantly, because the question really is also, are we mature enough for the technologies? Are we wise enough right now to ask the questions and to face who we are as the technology is mirroring what we are back to us, right? Are we able to face who we are using these technologies and transcend that? because those two, just those two technologies that I mentioned, you know, especially blockchain, especially VR, there are things that are going on with the development of them. There are a lot of ethical issues, and we can say that about every technology, I know that, that I just think we need more time to figure out before we push the technology onto the consumer.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, I think then you run into, I mean, you know, lots of people complain about privacy and, you know, data privacy and social media, which, I mean, I agree that there's issues there, but all of a sudden now you're tracking everyone's movement in VR and, you know, all of these other, you know, it's like my concern, you know, this came from someone else, not me, but is our, you know, even our governmental structures do not move quickly enough to handle, like, to your point, the, you know, a few minutes ago, if all five of these novel technologies actually took off and were in ready use, how would we handle, you know, how would we regulate privacy and in right. an environment where VR, AI, you know, all of these things are regularly, you know, part of day-to-day, you know, regular right. life? I mean, how do we handle a world where that stuff is, I mean, it is becoming more prevalent. So, you know, how do we handle a world where that is commonplace?
Right. Well, and here's another great example, or I think a decent example. To be honest with you, I also, the impetus, the emotion behind what made me launch Tech 2025 was anger and disgust, which I know it's negative, but it can be used for positive. Here's the thing. Eric Schmidt and Sebastian Thrun, co-author, and, you know, Sebastian Thrun, I think, is the co-founder of, or the founder of Khan Academy. And Eric Schmidt of Google, you know, former chairman of Google. But anyway, they co-authored an article in 2016, I think it was June, in Forbes. And the article, I was angry after reading it, because the gist of the article was that they were saying, look, don't be such wussies about AI. Okay. They were basically responding to, you know, they are tech utopianists, right? They believe technology is going to save. Yeah, they were responding to Elon Musk and the late Stephen Hawking and the men of those ilk who think, you know, that technology could possibly destroy us and whatever. And so their response was this article, and they basically said, hey, listen, we are going to turn this world into a mecca utopia, and AI is our greatest tool to do that. So stop asking all of these ridiculous questions and creating these horror scenarios. Just let us do what we're going to do, which I thought was disgusting. I was so angry at that I would say that's one of the main things that made me launch Tech 2025, because I said, okay, so you aren't in any way even entertaining the possibility that these technologies can have an adverse effect or devastating effect for many, many people. And that just right. historically doesn't make sense. Any transitional period, you know, industrial revolution, whatever, thousands, millions of people fall through the cracks. The problem is, the thing is that we usually have time to absorb that as a society. We don't really have time right now because it's moving so quickly, that the development of the technologies. But when I heard that, it made me say, okay, if these are the people who are developing the technologies and they aren't even considering that it's going to be a problem, we're in trouble. And then a few months later, of course, I sat in front of, as I told you, you know, when I saw you the last time, in front of Mark Zuckerberg, when he gave that now famous talk where he was asked by David Kirkpatrick at Techonomy, hey, do you think Facebook had anything to do with Russian interference of the election or in any way in 2016? And, you know, Mark's answer was no. I sat right in front of him and I saw the look on his face when he seemed absolutely stunned and disgusted that could even be considered. Now, of course, now he knows, you know, everybody knows, and he even admits that was his biggest mistake, and it probably in his entire, you know, tenure at Facebook. But it's right. The point is you don't even see there's such an arrogance there, such a desire to turn this into something without seeing that everything comes at a cost, at a price, that you are willing to dismiss the idea of people possibly being hurt by these technologies, or society as a whole being hurt by these technologies. And that's a problem. Yeah. And it doesn't seem to be getting better.
Right. I mean, as more as more technologies arise, you know, it's sort of people divert their attention to the newer things when it may be something, you know, 5 years, 10 years old.
It's just three words we have to ask: at what cost? Yeah. Okay, you're going to give me utopia. You tell me I'm going to be in a flying car. Okay. whatever your thing is. Sounds fun, but what is it with flying cars? Who's asking for flying cars?
It's Blade Runner. It did it to me, but yeah,
it's Blade Runner, right? But the thing is we should always be asking. And I literally launched Tech 2025 under the guise of us always thinking about asking the question: at what cost? Right? The bigger, the grander the claims, the more we might have to sacrifice to get that. So if you're telling me AI is going to make this world a utopia, well, yeah, but at what cost? And who's going to pay the price?
Well, on switching gears a little bit to go to the employee side, you know, you've mentioned a little bit before, you know, where leaders of companies are not necessarily, you know, they may have the vision and the ideas, the general ideas, but you know, listening to employees and quality of life for the employees becomes more and more important, particularly when not only at least currently unemployment is where it is, gig workers are increasing, so on and so forth. So you know, this idea of customer experience is really driven by employee experience. What are your thoughts on, is employee experience, it's certainly, I deal with it every day and hear about it a lot, but is that something that's solely, driven by the economy, or is that, is this sort of, regardless of what may happen in, 12 months, 4 years, whatever, it's kind of here to stay, that companies are going to be paying more attention, or should be paying more attention, to their employees and stuff like that. Mm.
Yeah, it's funny you should mention that, because we have an event next week on developing the next generation of technological leaders or technology leaders in companies. And I'm really intrigued by this, because I think historically companies have, they have set the tone, obviously, through their culture and their mission as to what the company is going to be. And the employees have followed along. Yeah. And if you didn't follow along, you were fired. It's just that simple. You don't belong here. Again, things are complicated, right? It's like it's the conversation between the consumer and the brand extends and is just as complicated as the conversation between the employer and the employee. And it's even more complicated because, the employee is helping to build the product or the service, right? And they see the emperor with no clothes.
Right.
A brand can hide from consumers in a number of ways, but employees, they have the keys to your kingdom. And a lot of these companies now, which is why I think what's happening with the big tech companies in particular is so fascinating, because employee activism is no small thing. The CEOs of the top companies in the country, if not the world, in America, they just released their, I think it was the Business Roundtable, released that statement, but back in August or September, where they said, we are 108 executives, including like Tim Cook, and, we want to change. We know that we need to change how companies, corporations are run. We are 100%, sort of dedicated to the shareholder, and we know that this is now a shareholder mentality of, and we can no longer do that. Now, why do you think that they're doing that? Why did they put out that statement? Granted, they didn't back it up with anything, but they did put out a statement where they all signed this letter and said, we know that we now need to be more responsible to employees and to vendors and to all the stakeholders. We need to treat them well. Yeah. Well, it's because they know what I've been telling Tech 2025 attendees for the past 3 years. They can't do this without you. They're screwed. Why? because the technologies that they're trying to implement are not as simple as 2.0, or not as simple as mobile apps. And, you know, it's not as simple. They are complicated. There's all sorts of unintended consequences. They are dealing with ethical issues that they have never had to deal with before. They are tiptoeing. There's blood on the streets, blood on the tweets. And so they have to rely on the thing that they've taken for granted the most over the past several decades, which is their employees, yeah. Right? But they don't. I don't think that most companies, I don't think they know how to do that. Again, it goes back to what I told my clients back in 2016. Are you listening to your employees? Well, that really wasn't the right question. The question is, do you even know how to?
Right.
Okay. And they don't. But here's the thing. They absolutely, the companies that survive, the companies that will thrive, forget about survive, you want to thrive and grow in the next 10 years, are the ones that figure out how to reinvent a mechanism of communication with their employees that helps them to bring the employees into the decision-making process in a way that's really substantive, okay, and creates the new leaders that are needed for the companies that are coming in the next 10 to 15 years.
Yeah. And do you think that's, how much of that is culture change within an organization and how much can be enabled by technology? Or do you see it as kind of both feeding each other?
Well, they both feed each other, but I mean, and this is for debate, right? But I think that the culture defines everything. And that doesn't mean that obviously I know that the technology defines the culture too, but the company culture, and that's a huge thing that gets overlooked. That's actually the core of this, right? Is that companies already have their culture in place. You know, you have companies that have had their culture in place for the past, you know, three decades. This is who we've been. This is who we are. I mean, and that's even for the big tech companies. I mean, you know, Facebook is 10 years old. You know, the big tech companies are 10 years old. And then you have Apple and Microsoft. They're 30 years old, right? But the fact of the matter is they pride themselves on the culture that they know has brought them a certain amount of success. And they are, like any of us would be in our lives on an individual level, they are slow to recognize and even fight the idea that they are going to have to change that culture and that it's changing very quickly without their consent. Right. So, you know, this is what the employee activism is about. And this is why that's so crucial right now, because this employee activism, which is centered around pushing back on the irresponsible implementation of technologies or, you know, irresponsible behavior by executives, including, you know, climate, you know, not being as involved in climate change as companies should be, or whatever the case may be, or, you know, sexual harassment or whatever. This is telling the leaders in organizations that your company culture is changing and you're not changing quick enough or effectively enough with it. And if you don't change this, you will implode. Or explode, whatever you want to say, right?
Or both.
And and here's the thing. Yeah, technology will be all over that.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's not about the technology. It's about what people, let me rephrase that. It's about how people want to see and define who they are through the lens of their organizations when they're working during the day, and that the lines between who I am at the office and who I am after work or on the weekend is no longer, it's not there anymore, right? There's no at work Charlie and at home Charlie. There's one Charlie now, right?
Yeah.
and people now, they want, and that's, you got to sort of understand that. I think, honestly, part of what we've hated about corporate culture, and when you look at any movie on, you know, that has to do with company culture, some of the movies from the 90s, they were great about, you know, workplace environment and the toxicity of it. The toxicity of it has to do with denying us sort of the voice that we need to be heard, and with a place for us to feel as if we can express what we are without being condemned.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that has been the basis of a lot of the culture. And now the technology is helping to sort of upend that.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating to see, actually, you know, it really is.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, hey, as always, I love talking about this stuff with you. It's been great to have this conversation. So one last thing, you know, before we wrap up, you know, what is on your radar? I know, you know, you have a lot of events coming up at Tech 2025. You know, what kinds of things are on your radar for this year? And, you know, what should people be, you know, keeping an eye out for?
Oh, thank you. Well, so now that we are, you know, everybody's like, well, you know, you call it Tech 2025. What do you do? You know,
yeah, what do you do in 5 years?
I know, right? I'm like, listen, we'd be lucky at this rate. We'll be lucky to get to, you know, 2023. Right, right. Yeah. We're like 2 days into the new year and we've attacked Iran. Great. So anyway, so what I would say is this, we are switching gears at Tech 2025. I'm going to say switching gears. We're doubling down on our initial mission, which is that the last 3 years have been about educating people and professionals and companies and the stakeholders on the fact that these changes are coming and that this is happening. And that was a lot of like shaking people to sort of wake up, you know, and I include myself in that as tech savvy as I am, and I work in tech and everything, but it was the realization of what's happening, right? And the feeling of, oh my God, this is really happening. So now that we've got the shock and awe over with, right? Yeah. Everyone's on the same page. We all know, everyone, no matter who you are, I think most people would agree, okay, everything is changing. And it's not only changing, but we've got to figure out how to make this happen in a way that's going to be responsible, smart. Where are the opportunities? What do I do? So for the next 5 years, we're moving into full-on strategy mode, starting with what do you do? If you're a company, how do you begin to sort of really strategize? And I say this more so to individuals, actually. How do you create a strategy that's going to make you more in control of what you should be doing, as opposed to feeling as if you're being dragged along by what's happening next, yeah, what's happening now, you know what I mean? Like the focus. So we're helping now people to focus. And one of the things that we're doing with that and to sort of get up to speed is to, we launched Tech 2025, T25 Continuous Learning, which is our upskilling platform. And we get a lot of requests from companies to do our courses, which are very grounded in being able to have non-technical employees and people learn about this stuff in a grounded way. And we get a lot of requests for that. So we are licensing our courses to companies for that. And we're also doing more courses for the public as well. We have that. And then we, of course, have our events. We are spreading to other cities. So you guys look us up if you want to learn more about what we're doing. Tech2025.com. You can sign up and follow us at Join Tech 2025 across the internet, across social media. And yeah, we have a lot of cool events coming up. If you're in New York City, we're doing more tech tours. We're going to Walmart to see how they're implementing AI in their new AI supermarket of the future, as they're calling it. And the whole idea behind that is that we want to get people out there and really asking questions and seeing the implementation of these technologies in a different way, as opposed to just sort of stumbling into stores and just accepting the experience for what it is, maybe being a lot more intentional and observant in the world that's being created around us, right?
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah. Well, again, I'd like to thank Charlie Oliver, founder and CEO of Tech 2025 and Surf Fresh Media, for joining the show.
Thank you, Greg. Yeah. You rock.
Yeah, oh, thank you. Yeah, I'd love to have you back as well. But yeah, and I'm looking forward to that Walmart event, actually, personally. So yeah.
Are you coming or not? Don't play with
me. I think I can make it. Yeah, so I'm going to.
All right. I don't want to have to stalk you. I have the technology to do it.
So. Awesome. All right. Well, to learn more about both customer and employee experience, I recommend you go to my website at gregkilstrom.com and make sure to check out my latest book, The Center of Experience. More information is available on my website or wherever the book is available, like Amazon. Thanks for listening to Agile World with Greg Kilstrom. See you next week.
Thanks again for listening to the Agile World podcast, brought to you by Tech Systems. I'm your host, Greg Kilstrom. You can learn more and get a copy of my latest book, The Center of Experience, from my website at theagile.world or on Amazon or other retailers. Until next week, stay agile.